offer you this lesson from Unity of the Keys Spiritual Center. I'm going to scoot back. I could easily get excited and fall right off. Give myself some space here. Stay right there. Last fall, we experienced a season of gratitude. And for weeks, we explored together areas in our lives to forgive, to release, to step forward in being our more truer selves. It was during that season of gratitude that the song Grateful was introduced to me. And that is how I came to know, and how then you came to know, Nemo. We then moved into Advent, the season of Advent. Then the holy season of Easter. We begin now a season of healing. The Unity Movement has introduced this initiative for the weeks between Mother's Day and Father's Day to be a season of healing. And how perfect that Nemo's date to be with us would happen to fall within those weeks. That was not planned. And so we take this time, these weeks between Mother's Day and Father's Day, to continue the healing that we are always in the process of doing. That we are always finding ways as things arise, as our buttons get pushed, and we get to examine yet again something we thought we had healed, and we get to look at it and heal it from another perspective and a deeper level. And Nemo, one of your tours was called Healing the World, was it not?
Yes.
Yes.
It was heal. They called it Heal Your World.
Heal Your World.
This was in the Philippines just a month ago, and we did a little show with young girls who are all musicians and theatrical artists, but their decision to do a show that was called Heal Your World was so powerful, actually, to hear it from young children. This idea that we are responsible, one person at a time, you know, to heal ourselves, purify ourselves, and in that way spread that message across the world. Yeah.
So that's part of the work that you did when you were in the Philippines recently.
Yeah, it was really beautiful because we had a concert that we were doing called Heal Your World, but most of the week was gone into actually connecting with communities there. And we went to one of the most amazing boarding schools that I've ever seen, 3,000 young girls from the poorest parts of the Philippines who have to take an exam, then they get interviewed by these nuns. If they pass, the nuns go to their homes to see that they are from some of the poorest parts. And then if they are, they get accepted to the school that was just majestic. 3,000 young girls. And when we got there, they're performing the song right in front of us, all synchronized. 3,000. I was just like, I thought I was going to be going into a prison. And I went into this, I felt like heaven. But places like that, we got a chance to explore male and female high security prisons, slum communities where the kids and families live in garbage dump areas. And what I feel like these are the souls of our planet. The warmth and the soul of our planet lie in these places. And the more we can connect with those spaces, the more our hearts open up to want to connect and serve a little more. So it's really heart-opening to get a chance to be in those communities. Yeah.
Yes, yes. As you all came in today, you were given index cards in case you had questions that you would like to ask Nemo. Bree, can you bring that basket forward? If you do have questions that you think of now, you can write them on an index card and the ushers will pick them up. No questions in the basket? Does anyone have written questions for Nemo?
Maybe they didn't know. One in the back over there.
One in the back. Okay, you can put the card in the basket. I will go ahead and start with some pre-prepared questions I have. So Nemo, I got to travel some with you on Monday as we visited some schools, and you very obviously have this magical rapport with children. Has this always been so?
I am a child.
Is that so the
secret? I like my friends. I love children. I always think to myself that children, this is just in my own imagination and heart, but children, animals, and trees are the purest beings on this planet. This is biased, I guess. I don't know. I just feel there's some this is immense purity that exists in these beings, and they teach us so much. And I love, like yesterday we saw whoever was here, our children here, just the joy, the simplicity, the true nature. It reminds us that how do we go back there? How do we get back to that space? And so to be around them is this constant blessing, actually. And so I really enjoy time with my nieces and nephews and all the kids around the world. I feel like they're all my kids in some way or another, my little brothers and sisters. Yeah, really enjoy it.
Well, and Nemo shared with me on Monday at the end of the day how rich, how fed he felt. You know, I pick him up off the ferry. I thought they fed him on the ferry. They didn't. He'd had no lunch. I take him to the first school. I go get some food, but he doesn't have time to eat it between the first and the second school. So it's not until like 3:30 that he's finally having some lunch. And then we go to another school, which we finished up after 5. And he was just bouncing. I mean, the energy, because he was fed by the children, this didn't exhaust you at all.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think it's, whenever we're in a space of, I think, love or a space where our hearts connect, I really think that we're fed in, you know, amazing ways. Then I think children do that for us. And even walking around Key West, I feel like the doggies are doing that for me. And everyone has a dog. It's so nice.
If you could convey one single message, and I know that your songs convey messages to the children, but if you could convey one message that you know that they would hear and embrace, what would it be?
To everyone, or to children, you're saying? I just feel, I really go back to Mother Teresa's beautiful quote. She said, "We can do no great things, but we can do small things with great love." And to go back to this space that whatever we do, how do we do it with that purity of heart? And not worry about how big it is or how much impact it's going to create or what are the ripples going to be of this, but know that and have faith that this is what I'm meant to do right now. If I'm meant to wash dishes right now, I'm going to just enjoy those dishes and wash them and clean them. And it's just everything. If our day goes by like that, then what a blessed day we have. And who knows where we're touching lives and where we're not and what's coming out of it. But what I love about that is Mother Teresa humbly says that, amazingly see the great things she has done on this planet. But she started off in Calcutta looking outside this private school she was a nun at and says, I just want to serve these kids out here. They're not getting served. And everybody was kind of against her in that sense to go outside of the congregation, and she does. And one little hand wash, wiping some snots off some kid's nose, who knew that it would unfold to serve so many millions of people on the planet? She wasn't worried about that. She was serving that one young girl or child. And I just think it's amazing. We never know where it leads, and it doesn't matter, but to do small things with great love, I think, is very important.
Which connects with your planting seeds. Yeah. Yes, planting those seeds.
Yeah, and letting go, and watering them, and wherever they may go, they go. You know.
Beautiful. Besides your heritage, we know that you were born here in the States, as your parents are from India. Was there anything else that drew you to doing work in India?
I went there to serve for 6 months and then I came back, but then I went there long term for 2 years to run a business that I had, a media company. But in the middle of that, I realized I was still not walking the right path. Going back to that space where I'm at now, which is the Gandhi Ashram, Mahatma Gandhi started this ashram or community space exactly 100 years ago, 1917, when he moved back from South Africa to India. And It's a sacred space, and for me to be able to, when I was trying to figure out a place to serve, I think it was the same reason he had selected to go back to that space, because it's my native state where my parents are from, and it gave me a chance to kind of understand the language and already create a tie with the children, and connection, communication is really important, I feel. So I went back there. The small little story that connects me there originally is in 2002, when I was living in New York, there was a small musical that came to New Jersey called Ikta, which means unity. And this was a show of 14 slum children from that nonprofit that I now have been serving at for the last 7-8 years. And they did a show tour across America, and I saw that show, 14 children from our slums sharing this message of oneness and unity. And I was just blown away. And I think it was the seed that was planted that later, about 8 years later, made me come back there. Yeah.
Because you had been very successful in everything you had touched. You'd been successful as a businessman, a musician.
Yeah, success is relative. But I felt fulfilled. I felt like I had achieved what I had been wanting to achieve in my small ways. And I think the main thing was that I wasn't feeling fulfilled inside. I felt empty in a certain way, even though outside, materially speaking, I had whatever I really needed. And to me, at some point in my journey, that really didn't make sense. That if this is what success meant to you, and yet you're feeling empty, then you have to rewire yourself, otherwise you're just going to live a life of suffering. And that really made me question everything and start over again. And that's when I moved to the Gandhi Ashram, where I've been trying to find myself. And Mahatma Gandhi has this beautiful quote that I really love. It says, "The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others."
Yes.
And I think as we start serving, it may still come from an ego space, but little by little, you realize that you're either going to continue suffering if you're coming from that space, or you surrender and you melt and you realize that you're just a servant. You're just a welcome mat. And you live in that way as much as you can until your walls start breaking down and you start awakening to who you are.
And so you have been awakening.
Trying to. Really sleepy all the time still. Yeah, no, I think it's a life journey. Maybe actually we joke around, it's a lifetimes of journeys. To waken up and to see the light and to see the love in each other and to keep serving and purifying our mind and heart. But more important than that result is to keep walking towards it. And yeah, yes, I'm committed to walking towards it.
And your sharing your love helps others do the same. Mm. Who are your mentors, your guides?
All of us. Children, animals, nature. My noble friends, my brother Neil here, he's in the back, I mentioned him yesterday, but just friends that I constantly am inspired by that are committed to walking their path towards not harming others, helping others, and purifying their own minds and hearts. I feel like those are all friends and families. And a lot of times, the times that challenges arise, or there is somebody pushing your buttons, they are the truest teachers.
Yes.
Because if I'm ready to work on myself, then this is the best opportunity I have. So ultimately, yes, everybody and everything and every situation ends up being the mentor. Mahatma Gandhi is a great soul that I appreciate the way he lived his life. His biography is called The Story of My Experiments with Truth. What I really appreciated about his life journey is that he experimented. Nothing was perfect. And to say, on all of our lives' journey, how do we experiment? One small step. We don't need to make big leaps. If I want to work on this virtue or value of myself, I'm going to just focus on that for the next 3 months. They're all interconnected, but if I want to stop judging people, or if I want to, you know, purify my mind in a certain way, or stop being angry, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. I love this idea, this experiment. Do little experiments, or in India, it's a big practice for me to do little experiments, whether it's like fasting or practicing certain, you know, okay, I'm going to commit to meditation hours this amount for this amount of days, or stop using this form of transportation because I feel it's luxurious or whatever it might be, but keep practicing, experimenting, and seeing how to keep working on, you know, oneself. I think it's so important.
I like that term, experiment. Ooh. What is the biggest pain, disappointment, or time when you experience change in you to do something differently?
I think there are many points. There was one challenging time where I felt like I almost lost my arms because they were deteriorating through what we call repetitive stress injury or carpal tunnel. But there was a 5-year journey where it just got worse to the point where I couldn't really use them anymore. And I was going through a phase of imagining where I thought life was supposed to go and where it's gotten to, and started doing different practices in my own life to purify that. I stopped drinking, meditating a lot more, and accepting the situation, but trying to find different paths. But the blessings of it all are so humbling. And, you know, we go through all of life's journeys with whatever obstacles we have, and to come out of it in whatever way we can, looking back and saying, wow, like, without that, I wouldn't think the way I think or feel the way I feel now or have been humbled in a certain way that I feel is the most important thing. So that was one important situation. 9/11, I was living literally a block away from the World Trade Center. I was working in one of the World Trade Center buildings, the World Financial Center building. When that happened, it was life-shifting. It made me question, and right in front of my eyes, made me really question, what am I doing here? What am I doing with my life? Yeah, I might be making good money and living a good life, but how am I really using my life right now? Who knows when it's going to go? And that was a big shift also in my heart to say, how do I want to use this time that I have, this precious time? At any point, the most unimaginable thing that I could ever imagine, I used to think about, whoa, what if this falls? And you just joke around about it. And when it happened, it's like anything can happen on this planet. And how do we want to use this precious time we have right now? And that was also quite heart-shifting in my life, yeah.
That reminds me of your quote from Empty Hands. Would you share that?
Yeah, Empty Hands, quote, the message behind Empty Hands for me is this, that we all come onto this planet empty-handed. All of us crying, naked and crying. And we all leave empty-handed. A lot of us might end up leaving in the same way, crying or not feeling like we want to leave. But actually, how do we reverse it and leave with a smile? But what do we need to do in our lives right now that leads us to the art of dying? You know, how do we live now so that we smile as we leave? I think is important. And knowing that these two moments are the beginning and the end of our physical journey here is so important, so that we let go of a lot of the tension we create for ourselves. And, you know, I still do it, but then it's a good reminder.
Yes.
To, wow, let go and love and give, and nothing's yours here, you know, so.
Well, the question is, who makes the heart pins?
Ooh.
Ooh.
These heart pins.
Heart pins, yes.
Yeah. I hope everyone got one. I don't know if we have, if you haven't got a heart pin, there should be some in the back. These heart pins are made by women in the slum communities that we serve in. It's an organization called Gramshri that helps empower women. This is all around the planet that women are, in third world countries especially, where women don't have much opportunity because it's quite backwards in cultures in India, Asia, Africa many times as well, where women are at home and it might be in a slum home. The male counterparts treat them really poorly. A lot of times they're using alcohol as their form of entertainment because they're also challenged in many ways. Really tough environment. So empowerment projects all across the planet exist to support women. This is one small one where they make a lot of clothing, home decor, a lot of beautiful items. And from that, we started noticing there's a lot of scrap material left over from the bigger items that they create. So that's why all the hearts are of different designs, because they're all different scrap materials that are then used to create small little heart pins. that I just love to gift around the world because it's so nice to connect with somebody and say, here's a heart pin for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the fabric that we are wearing was once in India.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. And once in a slum home, because these projects are meant for the women to be able to go back home and work at their own rate and time. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you. What is your mother's first name?
My mom's first name is Bharti. We call her Betty. Mom and Dad used to have a Blimpies, like a Subway type of store, so her name in the store is, my name is Betty. She's awesome. She loves doing stand-up comedy. Imagine a almost 70-year-old Indian lady doing stand-up comedy. It's pretty rocking.
I'm trying to.
She's constantly researching YouTube, and then she comes to my dad and myself. She's like, what do you think about this one? And she'll share her jokes, her ideas, and she's awesome.
What does a typical day in your ashram look like?
Oh, there's no typical day.
No typical day.
Yeah, I really realized, I was sharing with my brother Neil, that last year when I came back from tour and I got back to India, I committed myself to Silent Mondays. I would not go out in the community because I just need one day for myself. And it didn't work. I did it for like 2 weeks and then the third week, and then it just never worked. But it's quite dynamic because there's so many amazing souls and people with simple, selfless service projects going on. And so there's so many things, and you want to be of service to as many as possible. So I do anchor my own projects and supporting the nonprofit there as a whole as well in whatever small ways I can. But we're always just helping each other. And so in that way, there's no social life, but there's 100% social life. And the service life, everything is all one. What I love to share with my friends, because they're like, how's life there? It's like, when I used to live here, I used to look forward to Fridays and fear Sunday evenings. And I don't know if we have that issue here in Key West, but I think out there we might. yes, and over there, I don't know what day I'm in. And life just kind of flows, which is a great thing. And yes, we do need time for ourselves, and I think that's important. I'm trying this year again. I'm going to try to commit to Silent Mondays, where I just focus on self and more internal work, but we're working with children, we're working with women, we're working with thousands of people that come and visit the ashram as tourists or as people that want to seek and learn. So constantly we're trying to be of service to them. We have our nonprofit, we have about 160 full-time, or 100 full-time staff, 60 part-time staff. We're always trying to support them. About 100 international volunteers that come every year, we're trying to support them in their journey. So yeah, it's fun and busy. Active.
Fun and busy. What is the difference? What is the difference between this country and India so far as spiritually is concerned?
I think for me, what I've gained from being there, and when I was young, I would never have ever imagined wanting to move to India. I do not like all that dirtiness and pollution and overpopulation. But what happened, as I think have been living there, is that all those things peel off of you. The things we are discomforted by start peeling off, and you realize that's not important anymore. And the heart and the warmth is the most important thing. So spiritually speaking, I think for me and my spiritual path, it's just about, the spiritual path is about peeling off actually layers. Everything is so amazing inside, but there's too many layers. So what India allows for me, I feel, that I don't receive as much here, is the capacity to peel and to keep peeling and peeling. And it's like nonstop. It's the biggest onion you've ever seen. And I think because of a lot of the visible suffering, there's suffering everywhere, no doubt. Because of the tangible, visible suffering, it creates a shift in you. You know, when I'm directly working, or even whoever visits, when you see a country, it's an exposed country. You walk and you see life through your eyes anywhere you go. You can see inside homes, you see people's hearts, you see people. And because of that, you know, that closeness, that grittiness, you're constantly being taught and reflecting and thinking. And I feel like, to me, those few elements create a very optimal space for a spiritual path, you know. And here I feel it's different. I feel like you have to have a stronger anchor. That's why I think homes like this are so important, because you need that strong anchor to commit to that. And to have a family like we have here is part of that path, to say, hey, this is how I'm going to commit at least once a week. And then how do I practice that throughout the week is up to me. Yes. But you have to practice. I think over there's daily, you're forced to practice.
Yes. You're in the midst of it.
You're in the midst of it, yes.
You're in the midst of it. Well, there's one last question we can get to. And that is, would you tell us what is next for you? Where do you go from here? Mm. What are the next few things on your tour? And then perhaps your intention or your goal for the next few months.
Yeah, I appreciate you not going too far out.
there's no five-year goal.
Yeah,
here.
I don't have any big plans. At the core, I feel the journey is to serve. As I'm doing this tour, trying to find opportunities wherever people invite me, I'm going to Chicago and Madison next week. I'm excited, going to a few elementary schools in Madison, Wisconsin, and they've been super excited about practicing gratitude and kindness in their schools. And one of the schools doesn't know that I'm coming. The teacher has kept it a surprise, but they've been working with my music and the message for quite a while, so we're going to do a surprise assembly, which is so awesome. And then the next stop after going back to see mom and dad for a few days is going to Israel. And I'm quite excited about that because of the challenges that we face in the Middle East. And we're just going to spend time with different Arab and Jewish communities in the space of coming together. So about a week of time in that manner. And then to South Africa for 2 weeks where, again, Mahatma Gandhi spent the biggest, most chunk of his time from 25 to almost 50 in South Africa. And so he has planted so many seeds out there. And the idea, we're doing a pilgrimage for 2 weeks there with a variety of communities, including Mahatma Gandhi's granddaughter, who's hosting for 3 days. So it's just going to be a blessing to connect and the same spirit that we're all doing, everything. And then going back to India, obviously constant inner work that I want to stay committed to. The external work that I'm excited about is having a dream for the past many years to have a theater in the Gandhi Ashram, and it's finally coming to fruition. We've been working on it for about 3 years, the planning. Right before I left, we selected the contractors. We're building an amphitheater for our children, an outdoor amphitheater, for them to have their own stage. It's in the Gandhi Ashram. We're calling it Jai Jagat Theater. Jagat means planet, so glory to the planet theater. And on October 2nd, we're going to have an inauguration. That's our prayer. This is the 100-year anniversary of when Mahatma Gandhi started it, and that's his birthday on October 2nd. And then December 26th, after Jesus Christ's birthday, we're going to have a big show that we're planning, that I'm just planning right now, called Jai Jagat, which means glory to the planet. And many other things going on, but this is a one beautiful little highlight. Yeah.
With all that said, it still feels so magical to me that Key West is part of that tour, and so grateful that you are here, that you've shared your love, you've shared who you are, you've shared your message, and just thank you so much.
There's a very revered soul of ours that we respect so much. His name is Reverend Hank Scher, and he's a Buddhist monk. He did a walking pilgrimage from Los Angeles to San Francisco, actually way beyond San Francisco, in the 1970s as a walking pilgrimage of peace. And he did three steps, I was sharing with you, three steps, and then he would bow to the ground the whole way. And he took a vow of silence, and it took him about 2.5 years to reach Ukiah, the city of 10,000 Buddhas, where he then continued in silence for another year and a half. But as an offering from my brother Neil and I for you all to host us and have us here for this week, Reverend Debris and Denny and just all of you. I just wanted to bow down to all of you and thank you so much for giving us this chance and this blessing to be here. So thank you. And with that, I wanted to just give you a small gift for the Unity Church that I wanted to offer to the space. And it's just a small little offering. For
all that I am, all that I see, all that I've been, and all that I'll ever be is a blessing. It's so amazing. And I'm grateful for it all. For it all.
Wow. Thank you so much. And thank you, Reverend Debris, for bringing Nemo here. And I can only speak for myself, but I feel very blessed, and I know that we all are very grateful. So thank you.
This is Reverend Debris Toms. If you felt spiritually fed by this lesson, please feel free to hit the Donate Now button. And if you are ever in our area here in Key West, please drop in. God bless you on your journey.